Hi everyone, this is Mike Lipkin again, and I'm here with my co-author of this fabulous book called You Belong Here, the fabulous Dr. Diane McIntosh. Diane, it's always a thrill for me to engage with you over the next 15, 20 minutes. So how have you been over the last couple of weeks since our last conversation?
I find it funny how you said again, as if like we're burdensome, where I feel like our whole job here is uplifting and encouraging. And so, but I do appreciate being called fabulous. That doesn't happen very often. There so
and,
I'm
and
grateful.
Look, so immediately, I like what you've said, because there are two kinds of again. There's again as in, wow, this is the moment that I wait for twice a month. And then there's again as in grudge activity. So I meant this in the former capacity, not the latter.
And I know you, so I knew that was true. I'm just pulling your leg, so to speak.
Well, thank you. But as you know, there's never a bait that I can resist. So I'm going to take it every time, Diane, specifically when you lure it.
Yeah, Mike.
But look, today our topic is the ultimate safety zone is the zone of courageous creativity. And we write about this in the book. If you want to know more about courageous creativity, well, then acquire the book and you'll find out that we're talking about chapter 21. The start of this chapter, Diane, I quote Ralph Waldo Emerson when he said, "What lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies within you." And so I love that quote because I know that whatever comes at me, I've got the resources based on what I have achieved, and I've got the potential based on what I'm going to achieve to handle what comes at me. And so this potentially is a great definition of the word courage, just believing that you can surmount any challenge that comes at you. So Diane, talk to me a little bit about, you know, courage versus fear, because as I'm talking to you, I will admit, I will confess that I am fearful of some of the challenges that I'm going to confront in the next year. And yet at the same time, I'm supremely confident that I'll prevail. So let's just talk a little bit about fear and the knowledge that you will prevail. How do those two coexist simultaneously?
It's a really good question, and not the one I expected you to ask. But fear, in a very innate way, is what drives us to do things, right? If we had no reason to, you know, clean our room or pay the bills, if there was no repercussion for not doing something or study for an exam, for instance, we just wouldn't do it. So we have to have some kind of driver, some kind of reason. And sometimes those are things like, I'm going to have my electricity cut off, but sometimes they come from inside. We don't want to let ourselves down. We set expectations for ourselves. So I think it's important to have that sort of normal fear that gets us to, I think, try to be our best when you're younger. And I think what you're describing, Mike, is something that comes with age, with experience, that I know no matter what comes along, I have the resilience, I have the experience, I have the ecosystem where I can get through it, I can make my way through, and I can survive it, and not just survive, but thrive. That's the essence of resilience. But when you're younger, I think a lot of people have an issue with confidence, they have imposter syndrome, and they sometimes fear someone's going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. And I think this is the whole idea of having this conversation about being courageous, pushing yourself. It's in you, but you need to help bring all those tools out. And that's yourself, the people who love you, the people you work with, your mentors, all of them can help you to be able to bring all that you have inside you so you're able to succeed.
Yeah. So I love that, because if we think about where we are, and if we think about where we want to be, there is a tension in terms of here's where I am, here's where I want to be, and then there's all the challenges I have to confront as I get to where I want to be. And that's the tension that can pull us forward and that can build our muscle. And what I'm finding, Diane, is people contemplate that tension and they turn that tension into stress. So tension is external conditions applying pressure on you that can develop your mind, can develop your muscles, and can be incredibly positive and constructive. Stress is your negative interpretation of that tension. And therefore, courage and creativity is the ability to contemplate that tension in a way that empowers you to move forward. And so in the book, we talk about the ultimate safety zone. And I'll just read the sentence, and then I'm very curious to get your commentary on this in this conversation, Diane. So we say the ultimate safety zone is the one that you bring with you and you create as you move forward. It's knowing that you have the creativity to handle any challenge that comes at you. And when you create this ultimate safety zone for yourself, you help create it for others too. So you mentioned briefly the ecosystem, and then you also mentioned the word again. But when I think about the work we've done together, when I think about the book we've created together, when I think about these conversations we're creating together, it's the together that augments my courage and my belief in myself and my willingness to take on whatever's coming at me. So talk to me, Diane, a little bit about how important it is to have A, that courageous creativity within yourself, but then B, to align with those people who can pull you forward with it.
There's so much to unpack there, Mike. I'm reflecting on young people who seem to be full of ennui. They're worried about the economy and can I afford a house and climate and all these things. And there are big issues, but there have always been big issues. Always. This is part of being a human being and in an environment that we can't control. And I think one of the ways that you help to acknowledge, to recognize, and to bring forth your own abilities is to recognize you cannot control everything. You can control you. You can control your own thoughts and feelings and behaviors. And if you can't, you need help, because that's usually what that stress promotes, is actually having anxiety that you can't control. But if you're spending all your time thinking about things that you really can't control, rather than how can I influence the situation I'm in, maybe by recycling, maybe by not leaving, the shower running for 45 minutes, all those little things do have a community impact. So I think that general ennui and being, serviced by social media is not helpful.
Yes.
I tend to think about this concept of bloom where you're planted. You never know where you're going to end up, but you also can be transplanted to other places. People now no longer, sort of start working for the post office when they're 18 and retire 35 years later. So you're going to be planted in different places, transplanted, that kind of thing. But being planted in a particular place, creating this safety zone should not mean you're putting big walls around the garden. You want your team members to be able to grow and bloom and move on as well. So it's constantly trying to find those people who get you, who can work with you, who you can learn from, who also want you to be able to launch to that new garden, move on and be transplanted somewhere else, or that next step in the organization. That needs to be really a purpose for young people, particularly. Who are my people here? And how do I help with, or how do I make sure that I create relationships where I learn from them, that they become your safe space, and actually you create safe space for them too?
You know, that's so good. In fact, that's a keeper, Diane. I haven't heard that before. I'm going to purloin it and use it. Bloom where you are planted. You know, it's interesting. The Olympics are on. We've just had Wimbledon and tennis, of course, is a part of the Olympics now. But Billie Jean King, the great tennis champion, said, champions win when conditions are not quite right. So irrespective of where you are, if you commit to blooming, if you commit to thriving, you will find a way or make a way to turn your circumstances to your advantage. But seeing as we're in the space of an ecosystem or context or community that enables you to thrive, in the book, Diane, and I've quoted this a number of times, you gave me the concept of the own your brain test. And I've said here in the book, in all your years as a psychiatrist, you've learned that the time to act is when our brain is our own. So talk to us a little bit about what that means and how you know when your brain is not your own and what you do when your brain is not your own.
I forgot that we talked about that, but it's something that comes up constantly when I'm talking to my own patients and what I have to think about with my family members or whoever, my friends who are struggling. Making critical decisions in your life must be done at times when you're well. When you're under a massive amount of stress, when something terrible is happening at work or whatever, is not the time to decide I'm going to move across the country or, you know, I'm going to quit my job or whatever. Making big decisions when you're mentally ill is really fraught because you're not making the decision with your usual brain, your healthy brain. And often you're driven by emotion rather than thoughtfulness, rather than careful reflection. So sometimes you need to rely on loved ones, friends who you really trust to be your Senate and give you that sober second thought. So when you're in a spin, you're suffering from anxiety or depression, whatever you're experiencing, and you say to them, I think I'm going to divorce my husband. And they say, wait, you like your husband? What's going on? I don't think this is the right time to do that. You need to listen to them. It doesn't mean that maybe you should be doing that ultimately, but it means having owning your brain means making sure that your brain is well enough to make those thoughtful choices, not just based on emotion, but based on that sort of confident reflection and understanding of the whole situation. Very difficult to do when you're highly anxious or depressed. And that means moving. You know, people don't realize one of the most stressful things you do in life is move. So moving, buying a house, having a baby, getting a divorce, these are big life decisions and should be made when you own your brain.
Yeah. So I love that. And we say that in order to know whether you own your brain, you should schedule at least quarterly check-ins with some of the people you trust the most, your key stakeholders in the workplace or the home space, and just ask them questions like, how do you think I'm doing? Are you happy with my performance and contribution? These are the areas I'm working on. What do you think? Should I look at other areas? Do you think I'm helping others grow and develop, or do you think I'm cramping other style? And certainly as a motivator and strategic coach, I'm constantly getting feedback. And some of that feedback I don't solicit. People tell me. They go, Mike, you used to be more useful, and now you're a little less useful. And so I ramp my contribution up because I'll tell you, Diane, one of my biggest fears is the fear of being irrelevant or the fear of not being needed. And so for me, the own your brain test is crucial because I cannot give you what I do not have. So let me go back to the definition, as we describe it, the Diane and Mike official definition of courageous creativity. It's very simple. It's the recognized ability to access your inner and outer resources to achieve your goals and find optimal solutions to your challenges, whatever they are. So let me repeat that. Courageous creativity is the recognized ability to access your inner and outer resources to achieve your goals and find optimal solutions to your challenges, whatever they are. And so to demonstrate our point and also to bring some levity to our message, we actually settled on the verb MacGyver. Now, the folks who are listening to us go, isn't MacGyver a TV series about an innovative CIA agent who could get himself out of every situation by being ingenious and being able to fashion either tools or weapons or escape hatches by whatever was at hand? And the answer is yes. But what is not commonly known is that in 2002, the verb MacGyver was added to the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary. And it is defined as to make, form, or repair something with what is conveniently on hand. And certainly, Diane, if we look at what's coming at us over the next 6 to 12 months, that ability to improvise, adapt, and overcome, as the U.S. Marines say, or that ability to find solutions with what is at hand and not lament what you haven't got and be eminently practical but inspired at the same time, may in fact be the number one skill of those people who are going to thrive. Number one. And number two, if you know you've got the capacity to MacGyver anything based on what's around you, and if you know that you can bloom where you planted, Diane, it seems to me that that is a recipe for inner security. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I will admit that every time you talk about MacGyver, and we talked about it in the book, I think immediately of The Simpsons and Marge's sisters, Patty and Selma, and how in love they were with MacGyver. But I will say that creativity is an interesting thought for me, because I never think of myself as being creative in the way most people think of creativity. I'm a right-sided brain, so I can't draw. I struggle to color in the lines. But we all have different kinds of creativity. I like to write. I like to think in a creative way. But I like the part about the internal and external resources. So the thing I love about my team and why creating this safe environment is so important is because I have highly creative people on my team that think we all are rowing in the same direction, but they come at it from different ways. They have creative ways of thinking. And so I have to create this garden where they bloom, because they're planted in my garden right now and they use their creativity, and it actually triggers me. Oh, yeah, let's go here. And so when we get together and have these conversations that are very open, we get to a place sometimes that I never imagined where I would get, because we all are able to opine in a safe space and use our innate creativity. And it's, the whole is bigger than the sum of the parts.
Yeah. So look, this is such a critical point, because we have a section in this chapter that says, commit to the vision that you have of yourself. And we say, by our definition of courageous creativity, as we've just shared with you, you need to have a strong conviction that you are creative. And Diane, all our research, all the Environics research says that about 1 out of 5 Canadians and 1 out of 4 Americans actually see themselves as being creative, because they don't think that they are artists, and therefore they don't credit themselves with that creative capacity. And yet, if you were to review your past, if you were to review the crises that you've resolved or the opportunities that you've pursued and realized, you would also acknowledge your level of creativity. So if you believe that you can adapt to anything coming at you, then you come into the unknown with that degree of confidence. And certainly the feedback, Diane, that I've got on people who watch our